Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hey, it's 4 past noon. Thanks so much for tuning in to this Friday installment of Connecting Faith. Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Nice to be along with you. And today, we'll talk a little bit about economics and an economic earthquake. Of course, our attention is focused on that major earthquake in Japan and surrounding areas. A major damage report there in northern Japan, seeing some 200, 300 bodies found so far. And a large section of a town, about 70,000, is on fire. That magnitude 8.9 quake. With 23-foot tsunami waves and more than 50 aftershocks. So, Matt, that's a major event, isn't it? Wow.
That is a lot of moving and shaking going on there.
Yeah, I would say. Some 1,300-mile stretch of coastline. Cities and villages were shaken there, and as far away as Tokyo, of course, hundreds of miles away from the epicenter.
And those pictures are just amazing. You see how far that water has come in from the shoreline.
Something else. 8.9 megathrust quake, they're calling it. It's the fifth largest jolt in the world since 1900. Well, obviously, you'll see a lot more on that here as the days go by. And we got a note out here on the Northwestern College campus that students, faculty, and staff are traveling. The areas are safe. We have a group that's on spring break in Tokyo, but all the individuals are safe. They're planning to return to the campus here on Saturday as scheduled. And another tennis team has been in Hawaii, and they're doing well as well on high ground. So our thoughts and prayers with you and your family, wherever they might be. If you have some concerns about that, I'm sure you're keeping close track of it. Well, we have another, earthquake or tsunami coming our way, perhaps, maybe sooner than later. Although we want to find out about that. We want to talk a little bit about the economy, talk about the national debt, and then talk about how we respond to our own economy and how we can be good stewards of what God's entrusted to us. Looking forward to spending a little time today with Ken Franke. Ken is founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company. Speaker, writer, and a presenter in Biblical Principles of Finance. He's been doing radio for many years, certified financial planner. He was a founding board member and past chairman of Kingdom Advisors, and he's on the line with us today. Ken, great to have you connected in. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, Neil, it's great to talk to you again.
We, obviously lots of attention on earthquakes, but I know that you're a certified financial planner, and that you're not necessarily a prognosticator, but we have had some unsettling economic times as well, and maybe more to come.
Well, you know, we surely have, and first, just to say that as I was listening to you, you know, the loss of life through these natural disasters really helps us keep, you know, the other things that we deal with in perspective. When we're dealing with financial issues, that's just totally different than when you're dealing with health issues or life and death issues, so our prayers, as you indicated, do go out, you know, to the people over there and the people rushing to there, to help them.
Let's talk about, we're going to open up our phone lines and give our listening family here an opportunity to get some financial questions answered or maybe some things of concern, some help along the way, maybe whether it's investments or just a spending plan or whatever it might be, or debt, all those things. Ken, let's talk maybe big picture a little bit first. I yesterday, the U.S. is running 222.5 billion deficit in February. That's the highest for any month, and predicting March isn't going to be much better. We hear the word trillion tossed around, can't even comprehend what a trillion is. But give us a little big picture of kind of where we are right now in terms of maybe national debt and the national economy.
Well, it's a great question. Of course, nobody knows exactly where we're going in the future. Only God knows that. But he does tell us to be aware of the times in which we live and to look at the big picture, as you suggested. As a prudent man, sees danger, takes steps to avoid it, and the fool rushes in and reaps the consequences. So we do want to be aware of what's happening. And you mentioned $1 trillion. It's interesting. I don't know how you wrap your mind around $1 trillion exactly. But David Schwartz is a children's book author. And he actually came up with a way of thinking about this. He wrote a book, How Much is a Million? And as a children's book author, he certainly appeals to me. But he said, if you think of it this way, and he talked about seconds, trying to relate it to some seconds something we can understand. 1 million seconds comes out to be about 11 and a half days. A billion seconds comes out to be about 32 years. And a trillion seconds comes out to 32,000 years. So the leap from $1 billion, remember when Senator Everett Dirksen said a billion here and a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money. Well, a billion, I mean, you know, is 1,000 times less than a trillion. $1 trillion is something that's really hard for us to wrap our minds around. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of debt. And you mentioned, you know, we talked about earthquakes, and one of the interesting things about the earthquake off of Japan is that it was preceded by two other quakes. Maybe more, but there was one in the 6 range, and another one above that was 7.2 or something like that, and the days leading up to this one, and of course this big 8.9 one. And if you recall, we've talked before about Larry Burkett's book, The Coming Economic Earthquake, which he wrote, you know, 20 years ago almost. And if you think of these economic times in terms of an earthquake, we have probably only had one of those preliminary tremblers, and that if we don't make the changes that we need to make to get our house and our national financial house in order, the big one is still ahead of us.
It was a couple of years ago when our bankers, I guess, investment bankers, I guess, maybe let us down. We, I guess, had assumed that they were operating rationally and logically, and that we, you know, we wouldn't get the sort of too big for our britches. But talk about what's happened since maybe a couple of years ago, and give us a sense where we are now today.
Yeah, Neil, here's the fundamental problem. You know, people are attacking capitalism and saying capitalism has failed, and there's a tremendous socialist movement underway in our country. Well, the truth is, as Ronald Reagan said, capitalism hasn't failed. People have failed. You know, and when we took the Judeo-Christian work ethic out of our economy, and we took the Judeo-Christian principles out of government, our government swiftly changed, and when we took Judeo-Christian principles out of business, our business changed. You know, they talk about the animal spirits of free enterprise and capitalism. Well, essentially, those animal spirits have run amok because we haven't been constrained by God's principles and living out those in our business life as well as our personal life. And so, in many ways, people have failed us, and they failed us in such a large way that our whole system is at risk right now and even being questioned whether it works. But it's not capitalism. It's the people's sin and greed and fear that drove us to this point, and that has to change in order to have long-lasting economic change in the positive.
I was talking to a friend of mine who is a financial advisor recently, and he said, it's as if everybody failed, which they did. They all deserved Fs, but we decided to give them Cs. Nothing has really changed. Has anything changed?
No, unfortunately, nothing has changed. In fact, the best way of thinking about it is, you know, so many individuals today and so many businesses are doing the right thing. They're getting their balance sheets in line. They look at their assets, they look at their liabilities, and where they can, they're paying off debt, and they're improving their balance sheets. They may not be able to improve their income right now, but they're paying down debt, their balance sheets are better, and they're looking at their budgets and say, how can we do this better in the future? And they're changing their budgets around. The lone exception to this, even the states are beginning to do this. The lone exception to this is the federal government. You know, they may talk about cutting spending. They're looking at very small areas of it. But what they really need to do beyond the cutting the spending is look at the total budget and make those decisions about where do we really want to spend the money that's coming in. You know, ironically, one of the best proposals I've seen a bill before in the Senate is with Claire McCaskill, Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill, where they're looking to cap spending at a certain percent of GDP. And 20%, for example, of GDP, you just can't go beyond that. We need to decide, here's how much money we can afford to spend, and here's how we're going to spend it. And we just have missed both of those things that most individuals and most businesses have already grabbed onto.
You know, when you talk about percentage of GDP, it seems like I've heard discussions to say, you know, even though we're talking trillion-dollar deficits, that in perspective, that that it represents just a, you know, a smaller percentage of the kind of economic generation that we're doing in a nation. So are we out of balance there?
Well, Neil, yeah, that's a, you know, that's a great point, and it's a reasonable point to make to a certain extent. You know, our total debt is over $14 trillion now, and that's about what our GDP is. So we're about our debt is, our federal debt is 100% of GDP. That's like Greece and, you know, and Ireland. So we're right up there with those guys. But our nation is so flexible. We have an economy that's unlike any others. You know, liberty and entrepreneurship are just in our DNA. The problem is, when you step just beyond that $14 trillion debt that we have now, and you start adding on those $1 trillion per year deficits over the next 10 years that they project, and you look at what we call the total credit market debt in the United States, that's the technical term for all the debt of individuals, corporations, the federal government, and Fannie and Freddie, and all of those. Well, that is now $52 trillion at the end of last year. And that's over 350%, not 100%, 350% of our entire economy. And then when you add in unfunded liabilities for Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare, you're up over $100 trillion. Some people estimate that to be $110 trillion. So when you look at just the absolute federal debt that we have, no, it's not that scary. It's not that unreasonable that we can't get that under control. The problem is when you look at the total debt through our culture, our society, which makes it harder to generate the productivity that we need, and then you look at the unfunded liabilities, we get into territory that really is unsustainable, and that's what has to be dealt with, and that's what the federal government has not begun to deal with yet.
All right. In just a moment, we'll talk with Ken a bit more about, you know, what this means for us, and then how do we establish our get our economic house in order.
Which? Oh, no. Call me Uncle Moneybag.
All right. Talking a little bit about money and the economy and inviting your calls today. 877-933-2484 is the number. It's Connecting Faith, and so we're connecting today on the issues of finances and spending plans. I guess we used to call them budgets, and getting some practical advice and inviting your questions today. Maybe you've changed some of your investments, or maybe you're interested in gold. I'll talk about that, or perhaps you've had to dip into your IRA. We'd love to hear from you and maybe some how things have changed for you economically. Ken Franke is our guest today, certified financial planner. He was the founding board member and the past chairman of the Kingdom Advisors. And he's providing us with some biblical principles on finance today. 877-933-2484. The phone lines are open. We welcome your call. 877-93-FAITH. Press 1 to join the show. So, Ken, you know, given what we know, sort of the big picture, let's talk about the our individual picture, the basic the family budget. What sort of things are you seeing there? You know, I guess as we adjust our spending, you know, we'd like to think that nationally that would happen as well.
Well, you know, here's the good news, Neil. You know, the last 10 years have really, I think, taught most of us a little bit more humility, you know, with our investments and our finances. But the other thing they've done is reinforced that the core biblical financial principles really do work. You know, they're suitable for any economy. I mean, they were written thousands of years ago, but they're suitable for any economy, even this economy today. And people who have applied those principles faithfully to their financial lives are better off than they otherwise would have been. You know, we never know how things will exactly turn out, but when we're obedient, we're in the center of God's will, and we can trust Him for the outcome. And I suggest, you know, so people that are doing that, keep doing it. Those principles work, and they'll continue to work. For people who have maybe haven't done all those things the best that they could, and maybe they're just learning some of those principles now, it's never too late. It's never too late to turn it over to God, because remember, we're working in His might, not our might. We don't always know that He's going to change things. There's certainly consequences to bad decisions. I've suffered those in the past, but God is amazing in His graciousness and mercy towards us, in working on our circumstances once we commit them to him. And really, there are really four principles that if everybody followed, we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in today.
Well, let's review those here before we start taking our calls, just to remind ourselves of what we ought to know and apply. And by the way, the number again is 877-933-2484.
You know, the Bible says in Proverbs 21, verse 20, I believe, you know, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. And I think that is such a core verse, because here, if you do these things, you almost can't get in trouble. You live on less than you earn. You know, people always think, I've got to make this amount of money or this amount of money, but our financial futures are more dependent on how much we spend rather than how much we earn. And so you see people who have very modest incomes, and over 20 years, they are much better off than people who have made much more money than they did, because those other people spent it all. And the person on the modest income saved a lot of it. So you live on less than you earn. If you live on less than you earn for long enough in this country, most people can become financially independent, but it's a choice that we make. And then you avoid the use of consumer credit. Consumer credit is a no-win situation all the time. Now, having a mortgage is different. That's another step, but you avoid the use of consumer credit. That's number two. Number three is build liquidity. You know, we sometimes get so hung up in putting all of our money into an IRA or all our money into a house or all our money into something that we don't have liquid. It isn't liquid. We can't use it. We don't have an emergency fund. Build liquidity. When you have liquidity, you're tremendously more flexible than the person who does it. You have margin in your life so that if you lose a job or you have a setback or your income changes, you're able to weather those things better than somebody that doesn't. And then the fourth principle is to set long-term goals. Long-term goals are much easier to achieve than short-term goals. Short-term goals are affected by so many things over which we have little control, our health, our job, the economy. But long-term goals are within our realm of control. How much we spend, you know, what do we spend it on, how much do we save, how do we invest it. But if you live in less than you earn, avoid consumer credit, you build liquidity, and you set long-term goals, you will be ahead of 95% of the people in this country in managing their finances.
Well, let me go back to principle number one, because there are many today that are out of work, and so spending less than they earn, they're not earning really anything. Is there a short-term solution to this growing problem?
Well, you know, certainly, you know, there's the government has continued to extend unemployment, you know, benefits. You know, that's some input. People who have 401ks or some savings are certainly dipping into those things. I really believe, and I don't think we see this as much as I would like to see it, at least. I really believe that the church's role in situations like this is to come alongside people in those circumstances and help support them financially. Now, not to provide a lifestyle that isn't sustainable, and not to, you know, if they've really gotten themselves into trouble for poor choices, but sustaining people through difficult times when they don't have the income to do it themselves. We do it for widows and orphans, and I believe we ought to do it for families, and that's where the church can really step up. But it's a tremendous commitment, because it's more than just the alms of handing out a meal to somebody. But that's where, that's a real role for the church in the, you know, in Old Testament times. Part of the giving of the Jewish people went to that, to take care of people. We don't have that today. But within their giving to the church, I believe the church's role is to meet the needs of people in these difficult circumstances, help work their way through it with as least pain as possible, but the people being realistic about adjustments that they have to make to their lives as well.
All right, getting some financial advice today, and we want to take your calls. Dale's got a great question for us. We're going to jump in with him. Let me just mention the number. Feel free to queue up with us and get your questions answered. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. And press 1 to connect with us on the show. And Dale has a question about a rollover coming up. Good question, Dale. Go ahead with Ken Franke.
Yes, I'm having a rollover from my 401k, and I have to decide if I want to put it into my other child's 401k or cash it out and pay off my debt on my house, or put it into another IRA.
And Dale, how much do you have left on your house, your mortgage?
I got about 2 years left.
Okay.
All right. 2 years left. How much money is that?
It's about $14,000.
Okay. And how old are you?
50.
Okay. 50. How much is in the 401k?
It's let's see. Well, right now our cash value is about $50,000.
Okay. And are you employed right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you have a job, and are you meeting your monthly expenses?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, here's everybody has different temperaments in dealing with debt. Some people just can't stand it, want to pay it off right away. Other people can live with it a little bit more. My thinking is when you're down to the last 2 years of your mortgage, most of the money that you have that you are paying towards your mortgage now is really principal payments, and the lesser amount is interest payments. So the interest that you would save is probably relatively small at this point in time. I don't think it would justify taking money out of a 401k and paying taxes on it in order to do that. If you're going to have it paid off in 2 years and you're able to do that within your budget, I would continue doing that. And I would consider with the 401k, I would do one of two things with it. If you really like the 401k, it seemed to indicate there's a new 401k with another company. If you like that one, it gives you a lot of options. You can put your money with that. If it were me, I would probably take that money from the 401k you want to roll over and roll it to a self-directed IRA. Just a little diversification. It's not in a company plan. We don't know where the government's going. I don't know, fearful about that, but, you know, we don't know where the government is going in regulating 401k plans. Putting the money in your self-directed IRA will give you a little bit more diversification and allow you to, you know, pick out investments that you like in there. If you need help, you can work with a brokerage firm. If you do it on your own, you can, you know, work with a Charles Schwab or a TD Ameritrade. And if you like the investments in your company's 401k that you have now, you could probably mirror those and do very similar things, you know, within the IRA. But I don't think I would pay off the $14,000 at this point if you're going to have it paid off in 2 years, just going with the regular payments.
And Ken, okay. give me a sense of what we're looking at. I mean, tax implications are significant, aren't they? In a situation like this?
Well, whatever your tax bracket is, if you're in the 25% tax bracket and you take the money out, you'll pay, you know, if you take $10,000 out of there, you know, you'll pay $2,500 in taxes on it. There are also penalties, you know, when you take it out before 59 and a half. So you have to weigh all of those things. If his personal situation were different and if he had many more years to go on the mortgage, I might suggest doing, you know, taking baby steps and taking a little bit out every year or so rather than doing it all in 1 year and paying it down more quickly. But when he's so close to having paid off, obviously he's been doing the right thing and making good choices. I would rather keep that money growing for him tax deferred, but probably move it into a self-directed IRA rather than another 401k.
Got a minute left here before our break. Do you recommend taking out, just doing whatever we can to pay down mortgage faster than it's the set schedules?
Well, generally it doesn't pay to take money out of the IRA to do that or 401k to do that, but absolutely. I would work that into my budget. My just regular budget would be accelerating the pay down on my mortgage. I mean, even if you don't save as much, once the mortgage is paid off, all that money that was going into the mortgage now can go into your investments, and most of the time you're going to be well ahead of the game, even if you start a little bit later, just being out from under the mortgage.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about investments and more, and we'll get into home mortgages, all those kinds of things. Maybe you talk China and, you know, gold and energy costs. All that discussion is coming up here in just a couple minutes as we talk with Ken Franke, founder and president of Ken Franke & Company. And he's a certified financial planner, as past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. And he is offering us some free financial advice today. And we'd love to have you join the program as well. We'll get to our calls in just a couple minutes here on Connecting Faith. The number to join us, 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Press 1 and join the show.
Pick up the phone and add your thoughts to the discussion. Call 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. And when you call, be sure to press 1 to join the show.
Jesus, you are my reward. To hear your
but Matthew 25, right? Jesus talks about the rewards and how we handle what he's entrusted to us. We'll talk a little bit more about that here before the end of the broadcast. We talk about being good stewards, what God's entrusted to us. Ken Franke is my guest, certified financial planner, president and founder of Ken Franke and the company. And he is on with us today as we take your financial questions. And Linda's been waiting patiently, so let's just jump right back in. Had to cash in an IRA. Linda, tell us your story and what's your question?
Oh, I've got a good one for you. I don't know that you've got an answer or not. I'm 63, and I was raised to provide, you know, to work and to set aside my money to save. I had built up my portfolio with my IRA. I had a 401k. I had mutual funds, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And I became disabled, and in 2005, when I became disabled, my husband walked out on me and abandoned me. And as a result, he left me penniless because I was not working. I could not get a job. I had to cash out all of my investments, and I took a tremendous hit. It was virtually pennies to what I would have had if I would have been able to keep going on, let it be. So here I am on Social Security disability. I still have, praise God, I still have I have a manufactured house. I had to file a Chapter 13 because the payments were too high. And I'm barely making it. And this is killing me because, number one, I was raised to set aside money to plan for unexpected. And I can't do that. Sometimes I don't even get to eat because I have a couple of pets I have to feed.
Sure.
And every time I try to get ahead, because of the government and with the Social Security, if I try to get ahead, I get penalized somewhere, so I always get set back. I take one step forward, and I get set back two steps.
Now, Linda, your story, I'm sure, is probably not unlike others.
I'm 63. What am I going to do?
Well, Ken, what do you recommend? What can Linda do? What options does she have at this point?
Well, you know, Linda, thank you for your call, and I can hear, you know, I can hear the pain in your voice, and I can hear some of the sadness and regret in your voice, and in not being able to, you know, live out, you know, the financial stewardship that you had always desired to do, and I have some practical suggestions, but they start with number one. I wouldn't beat myself up too much. A lot of circumstances, you know, disabled, the husband leaving, those types of things. The economy. A lot of people have been caught in this economy that have been doing a lot of things right. I'd be very careful to be too hard on myself. You know, Paul tells us in Philippians 3 to, you know, just putting behind the things that are behind us and just forgetting them. And I put that behind me. You know, if there's anything you need to confess, you confess it. But I wouldn't be too hard on myself. That's the first thing. So I wouldn't keep going around the block and making it harder to make decisions going forward because I'm kind of dragging that along with me. The second thing I would remember is this, that in Hebrews 13:5, there's this wonderful little passage. You know, it says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. That's important for all of us. And I realize you're forcibly into that situation. But the reason we can do that, he says, because the Lord will never leave us nor forsake us. And I think that's the second thing that's critical to remember, that God does not leave us, does not forsake us. He knows our circumstances. He's sovereign over all of these things. Doesn't mean we always understand why the things that happen, but he is sovereign, he is in control, and he will not forsake you. Now, you can look at your circumstances because it says in Hebrews 13:5, be content with what you have. So you look at what do I have? I may have very little. You said you mentioned you have a manufactured home. Most people can find ways to reduce their expenses, and it sounds like you've been really aggressive doing this. So I'm going to suggest something a little bit different. I don't know if this is going to work or not, but I've seen this work in a lot of people's lives. You know, somebody may buy a manufactured home, for example, or any home, and the markets have turned south, and depending on when they bought it, their home may be worth a lot less than they paid for it. But you can very often sell a home like that into a market like this where people are downscaling and they need to have a less expensive home, and you can move to even something less expensive. and you're not really necessarily giving up a lot. You're selling your home for less, but you're also be able to buy another place for less. And sometimes it's even better to rent. So you kind of have to look at, what are my resources? Lord, what have you provided with me? This is what I have now. I'm 63 years old. How do I best use this for your glory and my good for the remainder of my days? And I would encourage you, lastly, not to do this on your own. I mean, I would get help. Now, I would get help either from somebody that you know that's a really good business person in your, you know, and a friend in your community, your church that loves you, or I would find, for example, a fee-only planner who could look at your circumstances, charge you for an hour of their time, and kind of help you add up all the balance sheet and look at what are my assets, what are my liabilities, and where can I make changes. God is never going to forsake you in this. We need to use our minds to think it through. And then lastly, when we've done all of these things and we still are not able to make it, we have the recourse of going to our church. And over the years, I've just watched many people be kept from doing that and receiving the relief that they could relieve because of their own pride. They don't want other people to know the circumstances that they're in and that type of thing. So when you've done all these things, you have an advocate who's tried to work these things through with you, who can even go to your church with you. Maybe it's some elder in your church that sits down and looks at all this. Your church is a legitimate option in God's economy to help you through this as a divorced, disabled woman.
Good word. And we should. I know that Ken, as past chairman of Kingdom Advisors, that is a resource place that has. Men and women all across the country, right? That
absolutely.
Share
men and women in every state that will come with a biblical perspective on how to deal with your circumstances, pray with you, and seek God's best. That's so important. You know, we can work with secular advisors, and I'd rather work with a smart and capable secular advisor than an incompetent Christian. But there's so many competent Christians who can go before the throne of grace on your behalf and pray to receive mercy and grace for you and wisdom in dealing with your circumstances.
All right, another maybe somewhat a similar circumstance perhaps. We'll continue on our calls and go to Lauren, who's waiting. By the way, the number is 877-933-2484. If you have a question for Ken Franke today, talking economics and stewardship and financial issues, 877-933-2484. Lauren, thanks for waiting. Go ahead with your call.
Hi. Well, I guess, you know, some similarities. My husband, I don't know, died a year and a half ago, unfortunately, to taking his own life. And I guess now it's just hard for me. You know, I think in a lot of ways he was wise with money. He had a 401k, and, you know, we had, unfortunately, a little bit of a second loan that we took out that was really bothering him. But now in my shoes, I guess I'm sort of similar. I, you know, with Social Security or whatever, I'm mainly at home, homeschooling one child and two others in Christian school. And, you know, it's hard to know that balance. Where's that balance? You just, you know, trust that God will take care of you, or where's the balance of, you know,
In terms of savings and financial investments, those kinds of things, right?
So, well, in terms of, yeah, being able to know what God expects. Does he expect me to go out of the home now and get some kind of a job? Or does he expect me to still homeschool my child? What does he expect of me? I really feel lost in this all.
Good, yeah. Good questions, Lauren.
Well,
thanks so much.
I can hear that in your voice, and I can hear your heartfelt desire to really honor and please God, and to pursue His best for you. And again, you know, I think having counsel, you know, people that love you and respect you and trust you, and you trust them, and have knowledge in these areas, can be just great to come alongside you and kind of help walk through these things. How old are you, Lauren?
Oh, hang on a second. Yeah, go ahead, Lauren.
45.
Mm-hmm. 45. And how old are your children?
16, 14, and 11.
Okay. And you're getting Social Security for each of them, right, and yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and do you still have like 401ks and that type of thing from him?
Yeah, I have a little bit of life insurance because, and you know, 401k that a family member helped me. I don't know. It's set up where it can't go lower than it is, you know.
Okay. And how much is in that?
I think about 140,000. It was up to 200 in the good economy.
Right.
I think something like that, maybe. Okay. I haven't checked it for a long
okay.
time.
And is that your primary investment?
Yeah.
Okay. And you own a home?
Yeah.
And how much is that worth?
Well, in a good economy, it maybe would be worth, I don't know, 300 to 350. But now, I don't know, maybe 260.
Okay.
And it's probably paid, well, I don't know that exactly.
That's all right. How much is the mortgage on it, approximately?
$1,170, I think.
Okay, that's every month. Do you know what the balance
yeah.
is?
120, about 120, 125, somewhere
okay.
in there, I
okay.
think.
Are you able to live within your income with the money that's coming in from Social Security now?
Which is really hard for me to get onto government health insurance, but
yeah.
When I switch that over, yes.
Okay. I think the most important thing is, I think there's a couple of things. One is, you know, with your children, you know, I'd be very relatively open with them about your circumstances. You know, God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, and I'd make sure I resisted that. I mean, I'm prone to that like anyone else is, but I'd be careful to resist that, the spirit of fear, because you don't want to model that for your children. It'll help you make better decisions. And one of the things that I would consider as I look at this whole thing, and I think this is, again, where a financial planner could be of tremendous help to you, is to just run out some projections to show you how to wisely invest that money. You may want to take a lot less risk with it now, you know, that you may have to, you know, use some of it. But is it best, you know, how quickly can you pay your mortgage down? Maybe it's best to relocate to another place, and maybe it is best to get a job and have a homeschool child, you know, go to school. If they can go to a Christian school, you know, that's great, but go to a school, and it may be God's best, and his orchestrating all of this through the finances to have that come about. You know, we just don't know. But I think you need someone to help you make these decisions so you can look at it and be informed to know that, yes, if I do earn this much money, part-time or full-time, it's going to make a huge difference in our lives. Or, yes, if I sell my home and move to something less expensive and presumably smaller, but we'll be able to live there and be able to be content there, and that's going to take a lot of the financial pressure away. Right now, you want it to get out from as much of the pressure as you can so you can be a good mother to the children, that you can live a fulfilled life, and you can be doing the things that God would have you do rather than being concerned about how all these things are going to work out. But that's what I would do. I'd find somebody who could show me the impact of making those types of decisions. And I think once you do, it's going to be pretty clear the best route for you to take. You just don't have enough information now to do that, and that's part of the frustration, I think.
Lauren, let's pray for you here before you go. Lauren, we do pray for Lauren that in her family, just as she struggles to know what is the right thing to do, Lord, we know that you have promised to give us wisdom. So we pray that on Lauren's behalf, that you would help her to understand the path that she should walk, that you would guide her day by day, and that, you know, she would not be fearful, and that would be reminded on a regular basis that you will never leave her or forsake her, and that you are the great provider. And so we ask that you would meet her needs and bless her and her family in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks so much for calling. We'll be back in just a moment. Joelle's waiting on the line. We'll get to her and her question with Ken Franke today as we talk finances. I'm taking your calls at 877-93-FAITH. We'd love to have you join the program. This is Connecting Faith. Ken Franke is on the line with us today, certified financial planner, and he is past chairman of Kingdom Advisors, He's a speaker and writer and talks a lot about the biblical principles of finances. We've been reviewing some of those. And Joel's on the line with a question, Ken, about credit scores and collections. Joel, what's your question for Ken?
Well, my question is, how do I bounce back from having collections on my credit report that I have paid in full, have taken care of, and just rebuilding my credit score so that, you know, going down the line I can purchase a home or that kind of thing while I'm also doing the financial things that I should be doing as far as putting money away into my 401k, putting money into a Roth account, and having money in a savings account. I'm able to take care of my month-to-month financial obligations, but it seems that that credit score, which for me right now is at the 600 level, just I'm not bouncing back from the hits that I took a year and a half ago. I don't know if I should go out and get a secured credit card to help with this, to show that I, you know, change my financial patterns.
Ken, how important is the credit score, and what can you tell Joel?
Well, Joel, you're sure not alone in this situation. And a credit score of 600 actually is not as high as, you know, you'd like it to be, but boy, it's a lot better than many, many people. And so that's a credit to, you know, that you didn't get into too much trouble, and they probably showed you some favor. A credit score is important. You know, it partly affects whether you can get a loan or not, but it more directly affects the terms of the loan, you know, the interest rates you'll pay and points and that type of thing. So for a mortgage, the higher your score, the better it is. But a 600 is not an impossible number to work with there. You just, if you can improve it. Generally, the traditional ways to improve it are, as you suggested, Joel, you know, to get out and get a loan somehow, either through a bank or through a using a credit card or something like that, but and paying it off regularly so that you don't get the loan in order to acquire things that you can't afford. You get it so that you can specifically make your payments on time. It wouldn't help you to, you know, expand the debt that you owe and not be able to make those payments. And when they see a record of consistency in that, that's going to help. Another thing you can do, and this is what I encourage everybody to do, is if you have creditors that you have paid off, you can go to the credit rating agencies and request that they take it off of your record. They will often respond to those requests if they can see that this is done and you don't have more debts. The other thing you can do is go to the creditors that you did pay off and have them write to the credit rating agencies and just confirming that this has been taken care of. Those types of things work in your favor. I've always found when I've worked with people who have debt, when you run towards your creditors and you run towards credit agencies, it's always better than when you try to avoid them. It's always uncomfortable. Sometimes we're a little embarrassed, but it's always better to go to them. And so if you had a JCPenney card, for example, and you paid that off eventually after being behind, you go to JCPenney and ask them to give you a release on that you can send it to the credit rating agencies. That's what I would do, and I wouldn't otherwise worry too much about it. You know, in God's scheme of things, it's going to be what it is. You do all the steps that you can take, and when you do go to buy a home, that'll be factored in. You may have to buy a home with a little higher interest rate, a little bit more points up front, and maybe that'll be a smaller home that you buy. But in the end, it'll be the best one for you financially because God is sovereign over all these circumstances, and it's always better to buy a little less home than we really can afford anyway. So I'm really confident that if you do these different things, Joel, you'll improve the situation, you'll be able to buy a home and be able to proceed with pursuing God's best for your life.
Hey, Joel, thanks so much for your call, and hopefully you're encouraged to keep on the right path. Sounds like you're making good progress. Ken, talk a little bit about, you know, how we really put our confidence in God when it comes to giving. We have our spring fundraiser coming up, and you know, a lot of times it's easy to get sort of that spirit of fear, as we talked about.
Well, yeah, that's a great question because, you know, the Bible makes it clear in Proverbs 11 that the generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will himself be watered. You know, we don't have all the legal giving of the Old Testament, but God's implanted it on our hearts. He wants us to be generous givers. You know, Larry Burkett used to say, God didn't call us to be funnels. He didn't call us to be buckets. He called us to be funnels, you know? And I find that even when we're in difficult circumstances and we're able to give to some extent as God places it on our heart to give, and that's what he tells us to do in 2 Corinthians, let each one give as he proposes in his heart. Doesn't mean it has to be 10% or 15% or 5%. It's what you're able to give, like the widow's mite. Well, whatever you give, it spiritually just frees you because, one, you know it's God's, you're demonstrating it's God's, and you're trusting God that if I give, that you're going to make all these things work together, because that's part of this. I'm going to live in less than I earn. I'm going to avoid consumer credit. I'm going to do all these other things right, and I'm going to give to your work and your purposes. And when you have all that in balance, we have peace. You know, Isaiah 32:17 says that one of the benefits of the righteousness of Christ is peace. And so when we're obedient, we obey God, we have peace, and we can live our lives out in quietness and trust and be an example to other people who are struggling and be able to share with them what Christ has already shared to us. And that's what we want to really be doing going forward, and we can do that through our giving in many ways more effectively than other things that we do.
And we truly are an example, aren't we, to those around us when we are living with peace and confidence in these uncertain times.
Well, when if we've been given a surplus and we're able to help other people, even step up our giving more, it really shows that it doesn't matter what's going on in the weekend, the nightly news, or what's going on the internet. I don't my widescreen TV coming in there. I don't have to worry about all that. I'm being obedient. People see that, and I can't think of a better witness for Christ than to have peace in the midst of all the turmoil and unrest that we see spreading around the world, including in our country right now.
Ken, we've talked a lot about the various verses as they've come up through the course of our conversation, thanks to all our good callers. Is there maybe one or two verses that you kind of keep coming back to just in your work as a financial planner and advisor?
Well, here's one of my favorites, personally favorite, and I think other people like it. It's in 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 11 and 12. Aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, to work with your own hands, that you may walk properly toward those on the outside, and that you may lack nothing. You know, to me, that is just a picture of peace, it's contentment, and it's modeling Christ to those people around you, and I just love that verse.
Kenneth Franke is founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company, speaker, writer, and presenter in Biblical Principles of Finance through radio and TV and writing, and certified financial planner, founded on the founding board of the Kingdom Advisors and past chairman there, and want to just give you his website. We'll link it to ours as well. It's Franke.com. That's Franke.com. You can get some information there. Ken, good to get caught up with you again. Thanks for your encouragement today.
Thank you, Neil. It's been a real privilege and a pleasure.
Ken Franke with us today on Connecting Faith, and thank you for listening. Coming up Monday, we're talking Centers for Disease Control has a report out about the decrease in sexual activity among young adults and teens. Now, what's the story behind that? We'll hear from Scott Phelps, who has some great things to say about abstinence and marriage education, why those two need to go together. Coming up here this afternoon on Live the Promise, Daniel Henderson will join Susie to talk about transforming prayer. You won't be listening for that. That's all ahead here on Connecting Faith on Faith Radio.